You're listening to the Soul Source Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Hellemel. Soul Source exists to share stories that are shaping our world today. We go straight to the source of the information to give you the best insight on topics and show you what's being done about these issues, as well as how you can help make a difference. So buckle up, Soul Source Society, because we're about to get started.
Yes, we want to have pay. But we also want to have the time off to enjoy our families and what life has to offer. And that's what I always try to remember Labor Day for, and all the blood, sweat, and tears that went into making that happen.
Hello, I am your host, Raquel Amel, and today is Labor Day, my friends. It is a day in the United States where not everyone, but most people, are off of work. Labor Day is recognized as a federal holiday in the United States to honor and recognize the American labor movement and the work and contributions of laborers to the development and success of this country. It sounds pretty great, and well, it is, but American workers were not always recognized like this. In fact, it was through the work of labor unions, specifically the Carpenters Union, that Labor Day even got started. Today, American workers are honored with this holiday, but there are still many other sectors of the labor movement that are still being fought against to this day. Take, for example, this whole COVID-19 pandemic. We still have thousands of manufacturers who don't have proper personal protective equipment. In fact, many union members went on strike earlier this year because of that fact. Now, this is just one example of how unions work. You see, they might cost an employee money in union dues, but when functioning properly, unions are there to protect the workers and enhance the company's workforce. Here to explain not only what a union's about, but also some of the issues facing the workforce today, is the International Vice President of the Steelworkers Union, Leanne Foster. Leanne, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. Thanks so much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
We're excited to have you here, and I mentioned you're the International Vice President of the Steelworkers Union. That's a pretty big title. How did you get in that role? How does that happen?
It's a pretty long story. So my dad was a member of the Paper Workers Union, and I grew up in a union household. And when it came time for me to go to college, there really wasn't a lot of money there for me to go to college. So I was able to work in the box shop where my dad worked, and earn the money that I needed to go to college. And through that experience, I mean, I was around the union the entire time I was growing up, but I didn't really understand the union completely until I actually worked on the shop floor and saw the difference that it made every day in people's lives. So I got really interested in it. And then I got pretty lucky because I had some great mentors along the way. So I ended up going to law school. And then when I was in law school, I clerked for the Paper Workers Union, the International Union, where my dad was a local union officer at that time. So I was able to do that and go to law school. And they were based in Nashville. I was in Iowa, but this was back in the time of snail mail and all of that. So they used to send me mail, and I used to, you know, draft briefs and things like that. But the general counsel, Lynn Agee, became one of my mentors. And after I graduated from law school, I practiced law in Wisconsin for a couple of years with a labor law firm there. And then I came back to the Paper Workers as a lawyer. And then the president of the Steelworkers Union at that time was Boyd Young. And he was a great mentor to me. And I became his assistant at a very young age. I was 27 years old. A woman.
That's rare.
Yeah. And charged with running a lot of departments, but he was a very progressive minded labor leader, and he wanted to see more women in leadership positions. And then we merged, the paper workers merged with the steelworkers in 2005. And a couple of years before that, I started working with John Geenan, who was actually the District 2 director for the steelworkers for a number of years, and then became the vice president. The position I'm in now, and was mentored by him for a number of years in bargaining and building progressive relationships with companies where we can. And when he decided to retire, I was able to step into his big shoes.
So you talked about all those different roles. You really get to see, you know, you said you got to see the importance that a union made. What was that though? What did you see when you were in those lower roles?
When I worked where my dad worked, I remember specifically him looking across the factory floor and seeing him pull out his contract out of his pocket on his work shirt and point out the language to a supervisor to say, no, you know, you can't do that. You need to do it this way. And I remember one of the specific issues was about Saturday overtime and when someone could be forced to stay and not be forced to stay. So that was something that, you know, really rang true because it was people that I knew for the first time, you know, in their lives. And I think it was someone who was moving their child to college and, you know, it was whether or not they were going to be able to be there for the move-in day, which was really important. So that's just an example, but there were a lot of examples, especially around safety and health, where the union really took on a role in the workplace of, you know, making sure that things worked for workers. And I was one of those workers. So it was something that I really appreciated.
When you look back at your career, because it has been so heavily involved with the union, you've done so many things. I guess, what would you say is, in your opinion so far, because there's still a long way to go, but greatest accomplishment that you think that you've achieved so far within the union?
I mean, I think my position is my greatest accomplishment, just because, not so much personally, although, because when I look back on it, I think there are a lot of major contracts that we've been able to achieve, getting companies to agree to a master type of arrangement where we've got everyone at the table so that locals aren't whipsawed against each other. That's all really important for a lot of people in the sector. But for the women in the union, I think it's really important that they see a woman at the table making decisions for the union and also bargaining for the union and doing everything that the men can do. And in a predominantly male sector of the union, I think it's really important that women see that. And I guess that's why I would think that that's my greatest accomplishment.
I would have to agree. I mean, it's very similar to the time we're living in. We have our first woman vice president, and that is such a big thing. And so I totally hear you there. I'm just curious now, because you talked about being one of the few women on the table. When you're at that table, how many women are there besides you?
There's one other woman. Her name is Roxanne Brown. She's a force unto herself. She is the person who oversees our legislative and political arm of the union. So all of our lobbying and then all of the work that we're doing now to get worker-friendly candidates elected.
All right. So I want to take a minute for listeners here, and I want to just have you tell me a little bit about what a union is for those who may be listening and, you know, heard about it, but explain to me exactly, what is a union? What is its role within a company?
So basically, a union is just a group of workers that come together to speak with one voice in the workplace. And it's really, I mean, when we talk to workers who want to be organized, certainly there's issues around pay and benefits, but largely it's around dignity and respect on the job and making sure that you've got a voice at work. You know, when I was in private practice and I was doing mostly labor law, we sometimes would get calls from individuals who wanted representation for one reason or another. And we'd have to explain to them that without a union, they are at will employees. So they can be fired for any reason. I always use the example of you could be fired for wearing a red shirt on Thursday. If that's the rule that the company wanted to come up with, and they wanted to enforce that, they don't even have to come up with the rule. They just have to say, we don't, you know, this is the reason why we're doing it. Now there's a lot of pieces of legislation that, you know, you could say, I was fired even though I wore a red shirt on Thursday, but it was because I was a woman or because I was a person of color. But when you're a union, you can only be fired for just cause. And within a company, the way that it works is once you win an election, the employees are certified as a bargaining unit, and the union, the employees in the workplace, speak with one voice to management. So they're able to sit down and sit at the table with management as equals under the law and negotiate for their pay, benefits, everything that, you know, impacts them on the job. And people always talk about the union no, but one thing that one of my mentors, Boyd Young, taught me is we always have to remember that the union, yes. And the employers who really harness that opportunity, if you think about it, if you talk to people about whatever their workplace issues are, and you're an employer and you're having to talk to each person individually, you never really get to harness the power of the yes, the union yes. And when you have a union, you're able to talk to people as a group and their representatives and have those people take that information back to them and be able to bring that power forward. So I think that employers who get it, who get what that can do for them, you know, can really succeed. And we have a lot of examples of that in the paper sector of employers who have really embraced that and worked in partnership with us to build a better company together.
So it basically offers a protection for the workers themselves, but then that also helps the company have more productive, better workers because those workers are happy with the environment they're working in, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for the most part.
And you talked about the Steelworkers Union and a lot with the paper industry, but what other sectors do you represent as a Steelworkers Union?
Oh gosh, who don't we represent? steel, obviously, rubber, oil. So, you know, pretty much anyone who works in an oil refinery, healthcare. Yeah, I know that I'm missing some major industries, but those are the main industries. Our largest local is a local of university professors. So education, So, I mean, really, I mean, we even represent police unions, public sector. We have some public sector unions, private sector. Harley Davidson is represented by the steelworkers. So, I mean, basically light manufacturing, heavy manufacturing, mining, obviously, that kind of hooks into our steel sector. And then chemical and nuclear as well. So, I mean, it runs the gamut.
Those are some pretty important industries. Unions, you know, how have they changed here throughout the years?
Yeah, I think unions, you know, one of the things I think that someone said along the way, I don't remember who it was, but they said, if you're in the labor movement and you're resting with your oars in the water, you're doing the wrong thing. So I think unions have always had to adapt. They're kind of built out of adversity, and that's where we play every single day, is in how can we do our best to represent our members in a really tough environment sometimes. But I think, in my view, those that are the most successful have really moved into the 21st century and kind of taken a 21st century approach to how we do business. We know the business, you know, we work really hard to understand it. We work really hard to communicate it to our members so that they see the big picture. Because if you look at the paper sector, for an example, the box side of the paper industry, you know, if you even think about even during COVID-19, has been doing relatively well, right? Everyone's ordering things online. Mm-hmm. However, the other foot of the economy hasn't dropped yet in terms of a long-term recession, which will mean less goods produced here, which will mean, you know, hopefully not, but we worry about that meaning less boxes. Then you have uncoated free sheet, which is copy paper. That's taken a huge, it was already in decline as more and more people use less and less paper. But now with COVID, you don't have people in the office, you don't have kids in school. And so that has just, the demand has just evaporated. So it's really important to know those dynamics and know that. The other issue is forming relationships where you can with companies to make sure that our member, at the end of the day, this is about our members' jobs. So how can we work together to make sure, and again, my example is the paper sector, how can we make sure that that industry survives, not only survives, but thrives in the United States? And, you know, but that does not mean that we're not willing to take on a company that is not respecting our members or the community. We always say you get the union that you ask for. And the first thing we're going to offer you is, you know, a partnership to work with us. And I think most of the industry will say that we've been very responsible in that regard, and that our members as well, you know, are great paper workers, great craftspeople. and, you know, they bring their heart and soul to the job every day. And their union does too, in terms of this industry and caring about it. And I think that's really the way that we've changed over time. You know, some people like to say that we're dinosaurs. I really object to that, because I think unions are very savvy. Even in COVID, it's a really good example. Our union didn't take a step back at all. We pivoted just like the rest of society did, and many companies did. And I think it's going to be a pivot for the better. We're finding new ways to reach our members. We have a lot of smaller locals that can't afford to travel places, but they can afford to take a half a day off and get on a Zoom call, you know, and get some basic education and share what's going on in their workplace and feel connected to the union. So I actually think that that's going to be something that makes us stronger. And the union movement is really good at adapting.
Okay. And speaking of adapting, today it's Labor Day, right? So yes, I mentioned that Labor Day was started by the Carpenters Union, which I know you're the Steelworkers Union. It's a different union. However, unions still started Labor Day. But explain to me a little bit about how that got started. How did Labor Day come to be, really?
Yeah, so I mean, in the late 19th century, people started to stand up for their rights at work. And, you know, you had some pretty horrific conditions. If you look back at the history of our country at that period of time, you had child labor, you had people working 16 hours a day, no days off, you know, at all. And in September of 1882 in New York City was the very first, not recognized, but people actually took the day off, working people, and marched for an 8-hour day, better pay, into child labor, better working conditions. And after that, more states and municipalities started to recognize it as an official holiday, but it wasn't a federal holiday until after a strike called the Pullman Strike, where the federal troops were actually pulled out to brought in to end the strike, and many workers were killed. And at that point in time, President Grover Cleveland signed Labor Day into law after a lot of pressure from labor unions and working people about what happened in the Pullman Strike. So it is a day that is, you know, we always try to say a bread and roses type of day. You know, we want our bread, but we also want roses too. And it was born out of the fight for that, the fight to have time off, the fight, you know, yes, we want to pay, we want to have pay, but we also want to have the time off to enjoy our families and what life has to offer. And that's what I always try to remember Labor Day for, and all the blood, sweat, and tears that went into making that happen.
For sure. And I mean, there's a lot, like that's one example, but there's a lot of common workforce practices right now that many of us take for granted and that the union is actually responsible for putting into place. For example, I know the 5-day work week falls into that. What are some other common labor practices that people may not even realize exists because of the union?
Yeah, so you mentioned weekends, overtime. So, you know, overtime after 40, that was fought for by the unions. Paid holidays, Social Security. So Social Security came out as part of the New Deal, but it was something that labor brought to the table as a potential solution. Safety and health on the job. So OSHA, all, you know, whenever anyone cites any kind of OSHA regulation or anything regarding safety and health on the job, that's the labor movement. Vacations, healthcare, and I always like to cite pensions, especially around, because many white collar workers didn't have some of these protections until unions fought for them and made them important. And then retroactively, you know, they were given to white collar folks. So especially pensions, healthcare, those things were fought for by the labor movement and brought into fruition and then now applied to everyone else. And it's kind of an irony now because in most of our paper mills, for example, the 40-hour work week, most of our people work, you know, shift schedule that where they rotate their shifts. So they may work 48 hours one week, 40 hours another week, and they work sometimes a 12-hour shift as part of that. So as we fought for all of that, we're still having to make sure that people still have time off in under those shift schedules, and that companies are staffed up so that we don't go back to where we were over a century ago and people not getting time off, because there is no standard under OSHA. People always mistakenly think this, that you have some sort of right to time off. You do in other countries, you don't in the United States. So it's something that the labor movement brings to the table, is our ability to hopefully improve that law so that it does allow people not have to work so much mandatory overtime, because not only is that not good for the family or the community, but it's also not good for just safety and health on the job, especially around the machines that, you know, people in industrial settings work in.
Oh, for sure. My fiance does the paper mill. He works in the boiler room. And he tells me some of the machines. He showed me some pictures before, and I'm just like, oh my goodness, like some of them are so big.
And like what your fiance does, I mean, they are so incredibly important, not only to the mill, but to the community. You do one thing wrong in that job, and you could have a huge explosion on your hands. So getting enough time off is really important. Now, some people want to work that voluntary overtime. That's great, but no one should be forced to work that, you know, if they don't want to. And that's our position in the union.
And we will be right back after this short break. There are thousands of jobs out there, good paying ones too, but they're being overlooked. Why? Well, it's because they're in manufacturing. You see, it's not really sexy to work in a job that pays an average of $87,000 a year. And it's not sexy that you have most of your education paid for through your employer while working. It's also not sexy that there's a ton of new technology coming out all the time, making these careers faster, better, and safer than ever before. Wait a minute. I'm about to marry a man who works in manufacturing. He makes nearly twice as much as I do, and I have a college degree. I don't know about you, but I think that makes manufacturing very sexy. To learn how you can get a job that'll have you living the good life, visit newmfgalliance.org. That's newmfgalliance.org. Welcome back. So much of what makes life just tolerable at work right now is because of unions. I mean, what I'm gathering from this conversation is we literally could be working 12-hour days every day of the week if it wasn't for the union.
And we were before Labor Day. And that's really where Labor Day was born out of, right?
So here on Soul Source, we're typically highlighting women's issues. And we talked a little bit about some of the women's programs that you oversee. And so I'm curious, specifically when it comes to the Steelworkers Union, tell me a little bit more about some of the roles that that union has played with women in the workforce.
Yeah, so this actually happened almost 30 years ago now. So up in Canada, and our former president, Leo Girard, was a district director at the time, a group of sisters came together and formed Women of Steel. And they got some grant money to be able to develop a course called the Leadership Development Course. And they started putting it on in Canada, and it just sort of took off. And now it is a course that we hold in each district of our union. We have 13 districts at least once a year, sometimes more than once a year. And we have facilitators who are local union women who facilitate that course. Under our constitution, each local is to have a women's committee. Okay. And so our hope is, and what we've seen play out, is that we educate the sisters for the 1 week and they take that education back to the local. And we educate them on, you know, what it means to be a woman in, you know, a male-dominated workplace. How can you make sure that your voice gets heard on the issues that are important to you? How does the union function? How does a local union meeting function? How do you get a motion on the floor and get it passed and all of that? And also just speaking skills. So, you know, I've attended some of our courses and you see women come in at the very beginning of the week and they're pretty shy. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the week, they've got this, you know, go get them kind of attitude. And they've done a speech, they've stood up, they've talked in front of other people and become real advocates, not only for themselves, but we hope for other workers back at the plant. And our local union leaders have largely embraced this because this is a source of energy that they have. And a lot of times our local union leaders, they're the only ones that ever really do anything in the workplace. Everything falls back on them. So if you can build up someone else as an activist, as someone else that they can delegate to, as someone else that they can ask to step up and take on a project. I always think of one of the women in our paper mills who her local union president, she went to a Women of Steel course, she came back and she developed a new employee orientation for the union. So welcoming new members into the union, a whole platform of, you know, what does the union offer, right? And so she was able to get that course and put it together where the local really couldn't get that done before because there's only so many resources, right? So she was able to do that because she'd gone through the course and because she kind of felt empowered to be able to play that role in the union. So that's basically our course. We have all sorts of Women of Steel committees across the country, and they all bring something different to the table. But what we always tell the guys is, look, it's like trying to fight with one arm behind your back if you don't have women with you at the table. And I always like to say that women can get stuff done, only that I usually say something different. Because we do. I mean, we're just used to multitasking. I think our brains work differently. All of that's fine. No one's better. Neither gender is better. But certainly together, we always can do more. And we do bring special skills to the table that if we're part of an engaged and active local union, that's really powerful to have women involved in getting things done. One of our goals that we have is that we'd love to see at some point in time, Women of Steel move into more of a Girls of Steel. And before COVID, we were kicking around this idea of educating the daughters of our members about the labor movement. It's kind of goes back to my story of how I got active in the union is through my dad. But if I would have had something like the Girls of Steel or to be able to connect with women, that would have opened up the labor movement for me at a much younger age, got me more active and understanding what the labor movement does for this country.
And even that career, because I know like manufacturing especially is struggling so hard to find talent right now, that's a great way to just get young girls even aware of like some of the jobs that they could be doing. So you talked a little bit about, you know, women's brains working differently than men's, and there's just some differences there. And I love that example that you gave of that woman with a welcoming committee, because I feel like that's such a woman thing. Like you would think of, okay, is everybody feeling welcome? Where a lot of guys, that just doesn't even cross their mind. So, I mean, that's one example, but elaborate a little bit more on that importance of having all this diversity as a part of your union.
Yeah. I mean, I think that it only makes you stronger, right? I mean, if everyone's voice is heard, if everyone's at the table, you're only going to be stronger. And that means the member that just walked in the door, it can mean that the person of color, it can be LGBTQ, whatever it is, everyone's perspective is really, really important in making sure that we've got a strong union and actually a strong workplace. So we're actually, because of all of the recent events that have been going on, we're working to develop a diversity, equity, and inclusion program within the paper sector, because many companies have approached us and said, how do we have more respectful workplaces? Doesn't mean you have to like everyone, doesn't mean you have to sign up, you know, assign yourself to their lifestyle, but how do we have respectful workplaces? We actually reached out again to our Canadian brothers and sisters who have a course called Creating Respectful Workplaces. And it's facilitated by local union leaders for other local union leaders. And we're hoping to put something like that in place because we think at the end of the day, that's going to make the company stronger because you're going to have more diverse opinions and and backgrounds. And it's also going to make the union stronger. Because if we're just, you know, all white male, you know, we're not going to be able to meet all of the challenges that we have in front of us, with just one perspective of how things are done.
For sure. And one other thing I want to talk to you about is I feel like unions are always under scrutiny. I always feel like they're always, people always attacking the unions. And so in your opinion, what is the state of the unions today? How are they being viewed? And what are some of those battles that you guys are up against?
Yeah, so I think COVID is a really good example of this. So I think some people think often that we're not very progressive, and hopefully through this interview, I've been able to showcase, you know, what, how we are progressive. Mm-hmm. And that we want to make sure our industries are here for the long haul. I think COVID's been a really good example because it's been a huge challenge, but we've kind of risen up to the task and said, okay, what can we do to make sure that, you know, A, people can stay home if they need to, if they have a COVID event is what, you know, kind of people have been calling it. Either, you know, they're getting tested, they're positive, or someone in their, you know, immediate family is quarantined, and so they have to quarantine. How do we make sure that people don't go to work in that situation because they're worried about getting a paycheck? Or worried about not getting a paycheck. And so they end up going to work and getting everyone else sick. And we were quickly able to secure that for people. And I think the ability to make sure that we have safe workplaces, we've had more and more people come to us over the last 5 months since this all started and say, how do I get a union so that I can make sure that I'm safe, because they see the stuff that we're doing, or they're hearing through the network of different locations that, hey, at the steelworkers represented locations, they're getting temperature checks when they walk in. You know, they all have masks. They all, their companies, making sure that everyone's practicing social distancing. And in a non-union workplace, you know, you don't really have, as big of a voice to be able to stand up to management in those situations. And OSHA has not been there for workers during this pandemic. They haven't been doing any inspections. There's not been any standards that have put in place. So it's really been every worker sort of for themselves, unless you have a union. Mm-hmm. So people always kind of think of us as kind of a step behind, but I think the COVID epidemic has shown that we're kind of a step ahead. None of the things that I mentioned, you know, taking your temperature, masks, social distancing are a fail safe, right? I mean, we know that you could still be shedding the virus and be, you know, not be showing symptoms. So a temperature check isn't going to help you. But if you do those things together, our view is, the workplace is going to be safer. And that's been true. I mean, we've had a couple of outbreaks in the paper sector, but nothing along the lines of what we've seen in some other industries. So
yeah, the meat packing is what comes to mind right away. We just saw so much of that a month or two ago when that was blowing up. You talked about some of those things, but that are in place right now to keep people safe. However, I'm curious about the PPE issues, because I know some employees, that was a big, big pain point, and that was something that they were, you know, protesting for and demonstrating for. So talk with me a little bit about some of the PPE challenges you guys have run into and what is available to workers within the union.
We've really been monitoring this since the very beginning. And all of our district leaders and our sector leaders and our staff, they're constantly in touch with our local unions to make sure that they have what they need. And where they don't, we get involved very quickly. We have an entire section of our website that's devoted to COVID resources. And we also have a place where individual members can report workplace issues. So if you're having problems getting masks, if, you know, if the company isn't implementing the policy it agreed upon, unpaid leave, if you have a COVID event, that type of thing, you can report that. And those things, so in the paper sector, that comes to the district director and to me immediately. So we can get engaged with whomever we need to get engaged with. And that's why those relationships are really important with companies, because I can reach out directly to my counterpart, let's just say, you know, at a high level paper company and say, hey, are you aware of this issue? And many times they're not, because they're not, you know, there's a barrier of management between, you know, local management and upper level management. And so we're able to get around that and say, wait a minute, you need to press on these people because they're not getting what they need at this location. In our healthcare sector, it was particularly dire for a while, but we made sure that our members were taken care of. And we actually had one workplace in the union that moved from one product to then making masks. And we were able to then, we reached out across the union to make sure they got the supplies they need, because supply chain issues in this pandemic, I think, are the biggest untold story of this pandemic. You know, people have been talking about tests and why you can't get a test. You can't get a test because a lot of the components that go into testing aren't made in the United States. So we are dependent on other countries for something as fundamental as testing our population to make sure that we can keep an eye on the spread of this virus. So that's something that I think moving forward, we're going to have to, as a country, come to terms with. We have to have a better supply chain. I'll give you an example right now. We just had a company shut down a mill that was in the copy paper business. And they're going to convert that mill over to board, which is great news, right? And we worked with them to make that happen and make sure that it was our mill that was chosen to have that happen at. However, normally it takes about 12 to 18 months to convert a mill. Uh-huh. This year, they're thinking about 24 to 36 months because of the supply chain issues, because the paper machine parts that are needed don't exist right now because of all of the backup and supplies that are happening. So you look at that and you look at very well-paid workers going without a job from 12 to 18 months now to 24 to 36 months, and the impact that has on not only the workers and their families, but the community as a whole, because in a paper town, six jobs depend on every job in that paper mill. So the tax base also takes a hit. So we're hopeful that it's going to be, you know, less than that. And we're working on ways to make sure that we get that mill back up and running as soon as possible. But still, that's not good news. And I hope that we don't see that across other sectors of the economy.
That's really scary to see how much we rely on so many other places for stuff that we could bank here. Gosh. Well, if someone wants to learn more about the unions, or if they even want to get involved with a union at their workplace, where can they go? What would you tell them to do, Leanne?
Well, if they want to learn more about unions and they're not part of a union, then I would say go to our website, because it's got great information. There's a whole website or a whole portion of the website, usw.org/join. And you can learn more about, you know, how to have a union in your workplace. If you have a union in your workplace and you want to get involved, I would say talk to your local union leaders. All of our local union leaders are always looking for more help in doing the jobs that they do. Because if you think about this, these guys are here and women are heroes every day, because all, for the most part, they are unpaid. If they are paid anything, it's a stipend for their expenses. So they're doing this job for free, and they're doing it because they, in their heart, really want to help people. I want to make sure that people are treated fairly on the job. And so I would say they need all the help they can get. So please reach out to them. And, you know, like the example I gave, the sister who came to the Women of Steel course and then came back and had this idea for welcoming new members into the union, you know, she's now a vice president in her local. which is a great thing. Yeah. And she works on the paper machine, has worked her way up to back tender on the paper machine. So, and I think it's just having that confidence to reach out to the union and learn more about it. We'll never turn an activist away or turn anyone away that wants to try to make a difference.
I love it. And I really have loved our conversation today, Leanne. I personally have learned a lot. I can guarantee our listeners have picked up on a lot too. So thank you for being here.
Well, thank you so much for the opportunity. I'll never turn away an opportunity to talk about the union.
Thank you for listening. And if you want to hear more Soul Source, subscribe to the show. We're available wherever you listen to podcasts. And if there's something you want us to talk about on the show, well, we can do that too. We have a Facebook group called the Soul Source Society. It's where we interact with listeners, share special content only seen in that group, talk about shows, get ideas for future podcasts, and overall, we just have a lot of fun. That's Soul Source Society on Facebook. We hope to see you there. Soul Source is brought to you by Red Shoes, Inc., a leading agency specializing in crisis and strategic communications, media relations, social media, and so much more. To learn more about Soul Source and Red Shoes, visit us at redshoesinc.com.